The homelessness problem in America keeps getting worse. With the fentanyl crisis, the tent cities, and rampant crime, over 650,000 Americans now live on the streets. And it's not much better when you go one rung up the economic ladder. The majority of working Americans are stuck in meaningless jobs, slaving away in office cubicles just for the thinnest of safety nets. Or they're part of the new gig economy, where one injury a bad month can drop you into a pit of destitution. With rent skyrocketing, corporate greed at an all-time high, and the homeless population exploding, America is reaching a breaking point. Will the death of the 9-to-5 workweek change anything? Or is the gig economy going to be even worse for people? Well, let's unmask who's profiting from the crisis and how they exploit the suffering of others. You see, in America, the middle class is dying, and it has been for some time now. Over the past few decades, millions of people have been cut off from ever being able to buy a house. For most, the means to move up in society are locked behind tuition fees, and even an education no longer guarantees a high-paying job. Meanwhile, massive rents have kept anyone who isn't filthy rich from being able to afford a deposit. Wages stagnate while house prices have kept on rising. This process has accelerated recently. A 2023 survey found that 78% of Americans live paycheck to paycheck, 6% more than last year. Soon, there won't be any middle-class people left. So what's the world like for that 78%? Well, the outlook doesn't look great. There's no time in history where jobs have been as meaningless as they are today. Work and workers aren't measured in productivity or any real metric. Instead, it's the comparative dedication to the corporation that matters. You could suck at your job, but if you regularly give up more of your life than your co-workers, it doesn't matter. You're still more likely to get the promotion. It's a byproduct of the outdated 9-to-5 system that nearly all big companies still use. People's time matters more than what they actually do. So long as you look busy, you're free to watch your life go by. And people only work these soul-crushing jobs because there's no other alternative. They only give the bare minimum in benefits and safeguards. You need it to afford health insurance, even though they'll still try and cheat you out of your life savings anyway. Lots of people could easily afford a mortgage, especially when rent is so much more expensive. But the massive deposits in the credit rating system makes millions of potential homeowners ineligible. The most pressing incentive, though, is that if you don't work one of these jobs, then you'll fall through the cracks. All of these Americans living paycheck to paycheck are just one or two emergencies away from bankruptcy. If anything happens, they'll be out on the streets, where a whole new world of pitfalls await them. It's this existential dread that is keeping the system running, but as we'll see, more and more different exploitative practices are slowly squeezing people out. Every state has its portion of homeless people, but California has the dishonor of being responsible for the most, with its homeless population currently reaching 181,000 people. That's nearly 30% of the entire homeless population in America.
Homelessness in California has been a big ongoing problem.
The complex and growing problem of homelessness has now become a political football.
But California is really in, I think, really terrible shape. The problems with homelessness, the problems with poverty, the problems with the schools.
So how did a state with one of the highest average incomes become the one with the biggest homelessness issue? And why is it only seemingly getting worse? You see, when people think of California, they think of sunny days, pleasant temperatures, a plethora of good jobs, culture, beaches, and open space. Big single-family homes with lawns and maybe a pool. It's an image that's long been thought of as the Californian dream. It's the perfect place in America that people from abroad see. But unfortunately, much of this dream is an illusion. Now, the state does undoubtedly have one of the biggest economies in the world. All the money is here, and all the job opportunities. But with this means the cost of living is also insanely high. So if you lose your job, you're definitely not going to be able to afford your rent. Even working class families with multiple streams of income are dangerously close to losing their homes. All it would take is one poorly timed disaster, and they'd all be out in the street. Unfortunately, this has been the case for quite a few families, specifically those who get into medical debt after a birth or an expensive surgery that their insurance wouldn't cover. Once people end up on the street, it's very tough to get off of it. Many of those who end up on the streets are pretty traumatized and suffering from mental illnesses, which are only worsened by their living conditions and stress. Many can't even cope with homelessness, often turning to drugs or alcohol to escape these bleak realities. Unfortunately, this usually leads to fatal overdoses.
80% of the deaths to date in 2023, overdose deaths are now caused by fentanyl.
Last year alone, there were 806 drug overdose deaths, just reported in San Francisco alone, and it's been estimated that almost all of them were fentanyl related. Unfortunately for homeless Californians, it's even more difficult to find shelter. The state has very little in regard to shelter and services for the homeless, but that's not for the lack of trying. In 2023, San Francisco's shelters have capacity for 3,240 people. That didn't even cover half of those who were living on the streets. Since 2020, the wealth of the top 5 billionaires has more than doubled, contrasting starkly with the struggles of 5 billion others worldwide, where homelessness has surged amid profound inequality. Oxfam International exposed this gap as world elites gathered at the World Economic Forum in Davos earlier this year, an event often seen as symbolizing the dominance of global capital over key institutions. I came across this article from Common Dream talking about Oxfam's report and used Ground News to see how other outlets covered it. Ground News found 240 articles, including the report itself. This one highlights how billionaires like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk contribute to what Oxfam describes as an inequality crisis. And this article reporting on the decade of division is from the Washington Post, and as you can see, it's owned by Jeff Bezos. The Ground News Bias Insight actually shows me that 9% of these articles are from sources owned by individual millionaires and billionaires. If you don't already know today's sponsor, Ground News does a really great job at making news completely transparent. Their app and website gathers related news articles from around the world on any topic with context like a source's political leaning, reliability, and ownership so that readers know exactly where information is coming from. They make accurately understanding current events much easier with access to primary sources alongside how the news interprets it, allowing me to fully trust my perception of the world. They aren't funded by big tech or media companies so that they can stay as non-partisan and factual as possible. Ground News relies on subscriptions to keep their mission of transparency going. So support them today by going to ground.news/moon to check it out. Plans start at under $1 a month, but my link gets you 40% off their unlimited access Vantage plan. It's a harsh truth that many of the homeless population aren't ready to reintegrate into society properly. Substance addictions, whether it's alcohol or fentanyl, keep them from getting any real help. It's part of the reason why so many homeless people come to San Francisco or other large cities with similar problems. With so many people on the streets, open-air drug markets begin to form.
So culturally, San Francisco has been very tolerant of drug use since the 19th century. It had opium dens that it was the last to shut down of anybody in the 19th century. Occupy brought a lot of tents into the homeless community.
Interesting.
In 2011, I mean, I remember around in Oakland where I was working at the time, there were all these Occupy tents at the down in front of the city center. And the same thing in San Francisco. And then after Occupy ended, the activists, the anarchist activists, just gave the tents to the homeless. And, you know, it seems like a nice thing to do, right? Like, here, you have a tent to stay in. It seems like the compassionate thing to do, but then it basically just grew out of control. And so
San Francisco, like lots of other cities, has given up on trying to completely solve the problem. Instead, now they just contain it, with certain parts of the city getting informally designated as the ghetto, where all the homeless people are allowed to exist. You can walk just 2 blocks in some parts of the city, and you see both towering skyscrapers as well as abject poverty. In these ghetto areas, drug dealing is ignored by authorities, and the neighborhood becomes a 24/7 drug market. Any homeless people trying to leave and sleep elsewhere in the city get moved straight back into the ghetto. It's all about containing the problem rather than actually solving it. In this environment, stronger and stronger fentanyl keeps people hooked far more effectively than heroin ever did. It also kills them far more quickly. But the city and the gangs don't care. Harder drugs and more homeless people to become victims are what's driving the increased fatalities. Some organizations like Urban Alchemy have attempted to rectify the situation by creating tent villages inspired by the communities that began popping up around San Francisco. These villages are constantly filled and are supposed to act as a step between the streets and permanent housing. Unfortunately, only about 2% have made the transition. While some of that is because of those living in the village have become used to their way of life, the biggest reason is that California doesn't currently have the facilities to provide the homeless with permanent housing. Dead bodies on the streets piling up in these giant cities across America. But there are other measures the city takes to keep the problem isolated. If you live in a city, you'll probably recognize these techniques going on where you live as well. Cities put divides on the benches so nobody can sleep on them. Shops will have iron spikes on the ground outside their windows, preventing anyone from taking shelter there overnight. They use all these same techniques that buildings use to stop pigeons making their nests, because this is how they really see these people. The state did begin work on several housing projects. However, the process of getting permission to build permanent housing is far more complicated than it needs to be. It doesn't help that those who have managed to achieve the California dream are unwilling to share it or sacrifice a portion of it for the sake of a few people. Take Atheron, the small Silicon Valley town just a few minutes away from Stanford, for example. In 2022, to keep up with the demand for housing, the city council began the process of turning a single family plot into a desperately needed 16-unit apartment building. Unfortunately, the project was axed. Was it a lack of money? Unwillingness? General apathy? No. It was actually just a bunch of influential people who didn't want to lose their views or see the value of their properties drop. The not-in-my-backyard mentality forced city planners back to the drawing board due to these powerful Silicon Valley tech elites being able to lobby for the homeless to stay on the streets. Atherton was not the only area area where this was happening. Even in less high-profile areas, residents will fight tooth and nail to keep the homeless out of their backyard. In the same year, the Woodside City government briefly prevented any affordable housing development by conveniently declaring itself a mountain lion sanctuary when a new law was passed that allowed the creation of duplexes across the state. Fortunately, the Department of Housing and Community Development didn't trust the scheme, and after a quick investigation, accused the town of, quote, deliberately attempting to shut off the supply of new housing opportunities. It was backed by the Department of Fish and Wildlife, who pointed out that it was impossible for the entire town to be considered a cougar habitat, and the Woodside government relented. Across the country, there are places like this looking for any way possible to prevent affordable housing. People hear about the drugs and the rampant crime and the poverty, and they form prejudices based on it. Maybe it adds to things they already thought about people lower down on the ladder, or maybe it makes them scared for their own community. The strict zoning laws are a byproduct of these caricatures. The news reports the worst of the crisis, and people watching at home think that's what awaits their town if they give in to progress. The top 20% are being convinced to support practices which enrich the top 1% at the expense of the rest of the country. What they don't know is that tons of the homeless people in the big cities move there from these places after being forced out of their hometowns. Rising costs take away their means to survive, and so they were left with nothing. Drugs offered a momentary escape, and that addiction brought them to the cities and the tense shanty towns. We won't see the rest of the country looking like San Francisco, but just the perceived threat of it is what drives the problem to begin with. More homeless shelters isn't the solution for the root of the problem, it only treats the symptoms. All of these cities with large homeless populations are like leaking ships, slowly filling up with water. It doesn't matter how you deal with the water flooding in if you never seal the crack in the first place. The immense increasing pressure on regular people trying to make a living is what causes homelessness. Rising house prices, rents, and the unbearable cost of living is what creates the problems. When people's lives become unbearable because of these pressures, they turn to drugs like fentanyl and just give up. The key is in prevention, not just treatment. The way that the rich safeguard their views of the skyline by sabotaging the building of more houses is a huge part of the problem. It's saddening to see just how far some people will go to maintain their luxuries while cheating people in need out of basic needs like housing or security. They will claim they want the problem to be solved, they just don't want the solution to affect their lives in any way. And the residents of Jackson Hole are a prime example of this. Jackson Hole is a small town in Teton County, spanning 2.9 square miles. This would be insignificant speck of land surprisingly has the highest concentration of wealth per household in the entire country, and draws wealthy to it like a moth to a flame. Yet even here, people are struggling to find places to live, and it's not because they aren't earning enough. You see, there's no shortage of work in Jackson Hole, and everyone earns at least $20 an hour or more. But this still isn't a livable wage in a place like Teton County. People in the working class can't afford rent, and if their employees don't provide housing, they're forced to live in one of the few shelters in town.
Well, you can't stay in the employee housing if you don't work the hours we tell you to work. And they basically made me homeless.
And whilst this might work for singles, there are no spaces for unhoused families, meaning they either have to pay a ridiculous amount of rent or live on the street. Recognizing this was an issue, the Jackson Town Council began development for a 48-unit housing project that would be placed near the town's rodeo and fairgrounds. However, the residents of Jackson Hole were not pleased. They immediately began protesting the project, with many claiming that the area designated for the project was part of a piece of their heritage. One resident claimed that the housing problem would never be fixed and that this housing isn't what the town needs.
So the town of Jackson is trying to move the rodeo and fairgrounds out of the heart of Jackson, and we cannot let that happen, and we need your help.
Despite these protests, development on the project has begun, and some are worried that once the project is complete, the building will be converted into luxury apartments, but they've been assured this won't happen. This not-in-my-backyard mentality doesn't affect everyone. There are definitely people who care about the homelessness crisis and do everything they can to help. Unfortunately, their good work is usually overshadowed by lobbyist groups and organizations who are more than willing to profit off of the vulnerable, even if it means leaving them without a home. It's a sad fact that the regular 9-to-5 jobs just isn't enough to survive anymore. The gig economy is making people more and more insecure in their position in life. Rising rents and cost of living have outpaced wage growth for years. People need a new way to work and live, and that's why people are turning to gig work in the first place. You can supplement your income or give up your job entirely. One benefit of this is that you're actually paid for your work rather than just your hours. The mind-numbing bureaucracy and useless pretending of regular jobs isn't there with gig work, but it definitely isn't a solution. Gig workers are even less protected than employees. They're responsible for the upkeep of their vehicles or their own office space. They don't get health insurance or sick pay or anything like that, the gaping pit of homelessness is even closer and easier to fall into, especially as many of these people in the gig economy don't actually make that much more. The route out of this crisis isn't giving more power to corporations and the tech industry. We need real reform for employees and enough pay to survive, not just a riskier, more exploitative alternative that might pay better if you're lucky. In cities like New York, where rent is rising exponentially, while people's incomes barely move, people are forced to look for cheaper housing options if they want to stay off the streets. The cheapest option available is trailer parks, or let's rather use the rebranded name manufactured housing communities. These homes were inexpensive and gave people the security of having a place to stay when the only other option was a shelter. They were still paying rent on the land, but at least they owned their home, even if they were dealing with bad credits.
Homeowners at this Largo over 55 manufactured community tell us that their lot rent could skyrocket too.
Unfortunately, people are always finding new ways to make money, and big corporations have decided that these poor communities, just barely managing to keep themselves off of the street, are the perfect place to make a few extra bucks. Impact communities and Haven Park communities began buying the land, housing these communities, and immediately raising the rent higher than some could afford. People who once felt the security of owning their own homes were no longer safe from homelessness, and those who were renting the land and their homes were even worse off. The corporations showed very little empathy for these people who live on their land, and have no problem evicting those who don't follow their guidelines. They take advantage of these vulnerable communities without any remorse, and are often favored by the law in these situations. Consider rent-to-own deals. They're just one way that corporations are profiting off the decline. Corporate landlords will do anything to make more money, which means there's going to be a lot more casualties along the way. More people get squeezed out of their old lives and into homelessness. Life takes its toll, and people try to find an escape. Every rent increase or house bought by a corporation makes life a little bit harsher. You can see why more people become homeless every day under these conditions. They simply let go. But for some, this awful situation isn't a societal issue to deal with. It's an opportunity to make money. So let's explore some of the awful ways people profit off the symptom of society's sickness. There would be money in building affordable housing. There's obviously enough demand for it. But unfortunately, that's not the quickest, easiest, or the most profitable way to do it. Instead, it's much easier to take ownership of what is out there and squeeze it for more money. So let's see how just a few companies are doing this. A business like Haven Park Communities will approach residents who are renting both their homes and the land beneath their homes and offer them a deal. They can pay a new amount each month for a specific period, after which they will own their homes and only have to rent the land. Most residents will take the deal because these amounts are often cheaper, and why wouldn't they want to own their own home? After a few months of paying their new amount, the residents receive a notice informing them that their lease will not be renewed and that they have a few months to find a new place to live. It's absolutely heartless, and happens far too often in manufactured housing communities. Impact is even worse. While Haven Park Communities at least improves the infrastructure of the communities it purchases, Impact will sell desperate people trailers covered in black mold for more than they're worth and tell them that there's nothing wrong with them. And they get off without any consequences while their customers are left to suffer.
The trailer that it was in was full of black mold. The furnace would come on, it was like I was strangling, I couldn't breathe. And the more I investigated it, the more I found out what was wrong with the trailer.
Frank Rolf, the owner of one of these mobile home businesses and the entrepreneur who has become the face of the industry with his university for potential mobile home park investors, wasn't afraid to say what everyone knows to be true about this industry. Quote, one of the big drivers to making money is the ability to increase the rent. If we didn't have them hostage, if they weren't stuck in these homes in their mobile home lots, it would be a whole different picture. And the use of the word hostage is very telling of the way these corporations view their customers and how poor they're willing to treat them to get what they want. Rolf doesn't seem to care that the communities he buys can't afford the rent he's charging them. And he even seems to enjoy that his customers can't afford to move their houses, or rather, he sees it as yet another business opportunity.
So if you take the standard mobile home lot rent in 1960, it was about $60 a month. And in today's dollars, that would be equivalent to $500 per month. Yet our average lot rent in the U.S. is only running at about $280 a month. So there's massive room to increase the rents. And obviously, that's a huge driver. From a profitability standpoint, it's...
Now, he either fundamentally misunderstands their situations, stating that those who are unhappy can sell their homes, walk off and abandon them, or he's happily making a fortune by taking advantage of those who basically have nothing left to their name. So then what happens to these people, whose homes are essentially stolen from them? Well, they're thrown into a system that seems more concerned with keeping millionaires' pockets filled than providing the homeless with a bed. So they're not tackling the root of the problem at all, really. Clamping down on these practices would have a direct effect on keeping homelessness down. Less people would be forced out of their homes, and therefore less people people would become homeless. But these are powerful companies pouring billions into the scheme of exploitation. So instead, lawmakers and cities throw their money at fantasy solutions that look good for campaigning, but do very little to solve the actual problem. So let's delve into some examples of this. The American government awards multi-million dollar contracts to various organizations every year in pursuit of fixing the homelessness issue. Unfortunately, while many of these organizations' employees are working themselves to the bone, making well below what is livable and doing everything they can to help, the CEOs and higher-ups aren't willing to make the same sacrifices. Take, for example, the Core Services Group. Since Jack Brown began running the nonprofit in 2017, it has become one of the highest-paid shelter operators in New York City, with the government having invested $352 million into its operations. And the fact that Brown was involved in an early 2000s Albany bribery scandal and accused of fraud by a former employee at Correctional Services did very little to deter New York City officials from giving him taxpayers' money. Under Brown's leadership, Core seems to be doing exactly what it has been contracted to, and providing the homeless with valuable services. However, people became suspicious of Brown's business ventures. During this time with the organization, he started a security guard company, a maintenance company, a catering company, and two rental companies. Brown hired all of them to assist Core in their endeavors. But where on earth was he funding the revenue to run all of these businesses? Well, following an audit and investigation, it soon came to light that helping the homeless wasn't nearly as high up on Jack Brown's agenda as filling his own pockets. What a surprise. Not only was he earning $1 million a year through his bonus from the government and from what the nonprofit was paying his various companies, but he had hired members of his family, all of whom were earning high six-figure salaries, and was granting his employees perks such as cars and gym memberships, which he reportedly spent over $460,000 on. And the worst part of all of this is that besides the nepotism and the fact that he was taking money from those who desperately needed it, his companies weren't even doing their jobs properly. The catering company provided shelter residents with rotten food, while the maintenance company allowed them to live with rats and mold. Even Brown's security company was useless. Guards would often sleep on the job or turn a blind eye where residents would do drugs or fights broke out. One of the residents who stayed at the largest Core shelter for over a year before eventually leaving in September of 2021, probably because living on the streets was actually safer, said that a lot of money was going into the shelter, but it wasn't going to the homeless. Because of the scandals that arose, the New York State government eventually cut ties with Core. However, the organization still had the gall to claim the city owed it $37 million and that the mayor was using it as a scapegoat. Core's PR firm, Marathon Strategies, was trying to claim that Brown was paying himself a perfectly reasonable salary as it lined up with what CEOs with similarly sized businesses were earning. But given the state of the shelters under Core, that wasn't going to fly.
They all agree and say they're not rushing into shelters like this. Dirty toilets, broken tiles, garbage-strewn facilities documented at the New Dawn Homeless Shelter in Harlem. A hard sell for outreach workers trying to convince them to enter city shelters.
And unfortunately, Core Services isn't the only organization willing to take advantage of homeless people. Help USA, another nonprofit founded by former Governor Andrew Cuomo, overseen by his sister Maria Cuomo, was tasked with providing services and low-income housing to the homeless, and yet it's doing the bare minimum. You see, this organization runs the Clark Thomas Mental Health Shelter, a 233-bed shelter for men based in New York. Residents are plagued by heat outages, sewage, and water main breaks because of rotten pipes, black mold, rotten food, prison-style beds, and issues with electrical wiring. The building the shelter is using was actually deemed a safety hazard in 2017, yet Help USA continues to use it. And the worst part was that when residents of the shelter spoke up about the harsh conditions in 2021, the staff punished them by taking away fans because they used too much energy, confiscating cell phone chargers for sharing photos of the living conditions, and actually sending residents to isolation for no reason. These accusations were denied by the city's Department of Homeless Services and the Department of Social Services, and the nonprofit stood by the safety of the shelter. Still, these declarations were difficult to believe when the residents continued to call for an investigation of the facility.
We get treated bad. They get treated better than us. That's not fair.
They treat you wrong like you're lower than nothing.
While it would be easy to blame the growing homelessness crisis on greedy CEOs who are willing to cut whatever corners necessary to make a quick buck, most of the time the issue is actually a lot more complicated, as some of the problems are caused by an unfortunate combination of poor management, bad incentives, and a lack of communication and collaboration between different organizations. The Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority distributes over $800 million between different nonprofits. It receives government funds, grants various organizations the money they need for different projects, and then determines the best course of action based on the success of those projects. Unfortunately, the way they run things is completely flawed. The LAHSA works with many organizations and has to keep track of each one with a system that makes it very difficult for the organizations to actually do anything. Every nonprofit the authority partners with is contracted for a specific role and set of responsibilities, which causes quite a few problems, as each nonprofit wants to protect its role and ensure that people working for it keep their jobs, meaning there's often disagreements over responsibilities with other nonprofits. And the lack of direct communication between the nonprofits doesn't really help. Because of the way this complicated bureaucratic system is set up, programs like Inside Safe, which was designed to get homeless people off of the streets by offering them temporary residences and hotels, became far more complicated than they needed to be. They require the involvement of 10 nonprofits, the police, hotel staff, and an oversight team. Not only does the constant trading of hands make it nearly impossible to provide an accurate assessment of the program's performance, but when something does go wrong, it becomes an endless case of "that wasn't my job." Last year, the LAHSA spent over $40 million on administration alone. And cases like this become so much worse when you realize that the authority isn't the only organization that works like this, nor is it the central authority in Los Angeles. Different organizations handle different homelessness issues, and each has its own expenses, meaning that lots of this money is never actually going to the problem. It's just stuck in a bureaucratic pool. And it becomes shocking when you compare the US's homelessness problem to places in Europe like Finland, a significantly smaller country that manages to solve its own homelessness issues remarkably quickly. And once you see this, you start to wonder why this has been allowed to go on for so long in the richest country in the world. And the longer we wait for people to stand up and speak out on this issue, the ever more complicated this whole situation will become.